are Locked On NBA, your daily NBA podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
What's up, and welcome to another Monday edition of Locked On NBA, the biggest stories with the local experts. I'm your Monday host, Jackson Gatlin, also host of Locked On Rockets, right here on the Locked On Podcast Network. Today, we'll be chatting with Nick Engstedt from Locked On Mavs as the Dallas Mavericks even their series with the Phoenix Suns, two games apiece behind 26 points and 11 assists from Luka Doncic, eight threes from Dorian Finney-Smith, plus some Chris Paul foul trouble. Then we touch base with Wes Goldberg from Locked On Heat as the Miami Heat fall in game four against James Harden, vintage James Harden, and the Philadelphia 76ers, despite 40 points from Jimmy Butler. Does Miami need to change how they're defending Harden? How concerning is the Heat three-point shooting as the series shifts back to Miami? And then we chat with Sean Coleman from Locked On Grizzlies. The Memphis Grizzlies are likely to be without star point guard Ja Morant after what was possibly a dirty play by Warriors Jordan Poole. Is the situation being made out worse than it actually is? And what are the Grizzlies' chances without Ja in game four? Now, today's episode is brought to you by Bet Online. Bet Online has you covered this season with more odds, props, and lines than ever before. Bet Online, it's where the game starts. As always, appreciate you for making Locked On NBA your first listen each and every day. Joining us now is Nick Engstedt from Locked On Mavs and Locked On NBA. You can follow on Twitter at Nick Van Exit. Nick, Dallas Mavericks tie up the series, two games apiece, and the way they did it in this game, we're going to get into a lot of the shenanigans with the officiating and all that in this game, but the Mavericks came out with a really, like, they roared out to a big start in this one, 37-25 start in the first quarter, dropped 68 points in the first half of this game. That matches their highest point total throughout the playoffs, easily their best first half in this series so far against the Suns. You know, what was working so well for them offensively in the first half of this game?
Gotta throw that in there. The Dallas Mavericks have, they found a little bit here, but the three-point shooting was what got them in the first half. Like, we had not seen a game this series so far where the Mavs just bombed from three and were just absolutely on fire. We had not seen that yet. And so in the first half, the Mavericks shot, they hit 14 threes. They're 14 out of 24 their threes. They had Dorian hitting threes and Davis Bertans coming in and hitting threes and doing something. And it was that three-point shooting that just really kept them in. And then on the other side, their defense has been just good enough. The Suns have been shooting, you know, 50% or better from the field every single game in the playoffs. And they finally, these last two games the Mavericks have won, have held them to like 46 or 44% from the field. I mean, it's not even like an incredible percentage, but they've just been able to hold them down just a little bit and force them to do things they don't want to do just a little bit more. And that difference has been enough for the Mavericks to get wins.
Doing just enough on the defensive side to be able to eke out these past couple wins. But a big part of this game four here was Chris Paul missing such a significant portion of this game, very uncharacteristically for Chris Paul, picking up some very strange fouls, we'll say his fourth, fifth,
say
and
it,
sixth fouls
say
here.
It.
Maybe phantom fouls, maybe some bad officiating here at play. I'm going to let you be the judge of that here. But Chris Paul picked up his fourth foul just before halftime, had his fifth foul not even 3 minutes into the third quarter, and then fouled out with a little under 9 minutes to go in this game. And that really did change the complexion of this game completely for the Suns.
Chris Paul over the last two games has honestly been probably the biggest reason why the Mavs have won these last two. You want to give a ton of credit to the Mavericks. You want to give credit to their shooters. You want to give credit to their defense, their culture, Luka, Brunson doing good things over the last two games. But Chris Paul just falling off. The seven turnovers he had in game three, and then the six fouls fouling out, like you said, in this game. I mean, he just has been a non-factor, which is wild to say. The way that Chris Paul has been playing in these playoffs, for him to be a non-factor has been huge for the Phoenix Suns. And if you want to go through each of his fouls, did he deserve every single one of those fouls? Probably not. Like, there's those, some of those fouls, the fouls all over the place in this game four were just brutal. Like, they were just calling everything, calling a lot of ticky-tack stuff here and there. And I think that Luka and Brunson adjusted to that a little bit better than Chris Paul and Devin Booker did, because Chris Paul got his third foul and got taken out with like 2 minutes to go in the half. And then he comes back in with like 48 seconds left in the first half. And he tries to go for an offensive rebound against Luka, where Luka obviously has the advantage on the play. Chris Paul jumps, and then he bodies with Luka, and he gets called for the offensive foul. It's these dumb fouls that this ref crew was calling all game. Usually, you know, another ref crew may have let that one slide, but they didn't. So he's just putting himself in a bad situation. Then he gets his fifth foul by doing the Chris Paul play. Like he got by Jalen Brunson, where Chris Paul is like, he has four fouls. And he can't get, like, his fifth foul. If he gets his fifth foul, he's going to be taken out of the game for a long time. And it's, and what he does is, in transition, he knows where Jalen Brunson is behind him. He has the ball in his hands. And he changes direction on the court to go in front of Jalen Brunson, stops and slows down. And then Jalen Brunson falls into him, and they call, and it's basically right there. It's a bang bang play. The ref gets to decide essentially who he's going to side with on this. They side with Brunson. That's Chris Paul's fifth foul. Then he goes out for a while. And then his sixth foul was dumb. He probably shouldn't have got called for it, but another situation he probably shouldn't have been in. And it's like, if you're going to keep doing all the Chris Paul stuff, like all the Chris Paul little things that he tries to do and pull off and get away with, this ref crew specifically was not going to have it. And you could tell early on that this ref crew was not going to have it. And after the game, Jason Kidd had an incredible quote where he was talking about, we're learning from the best. You know, some of these things that we're getting away with, we're looking across and watching what Chris Paul does, and we're just learning from the best over here. That was an incredible troll quote from Jason Kidd.
Yeah, those little Chris Paul-isms, sometimes they work out in your favor. And like foul number five for CP3 in this one, it just did not work out this time for him. But you look at how Luka played specifically in this game here, Nick, and you know the efficiency wasn't quite there, unfortunately, for Luka. Just 9 of 25 from the floor, 1 of 10 from 3, despite the fact that you had, you know, Dorian Finney-Smith, who could not miss from 3 in this game. You had Luka, who just couldn't hit anything from 3. So is there a bit more, you know, some confidence here moving forward in this series that you can come away with a win of this caliber for the Mavericks here in Game 4, despite the fact that Luka didn't have, like, one of his all-around, like, super phenomenal performances?
This Mavericks team has always just been a little bit better, and I think most basketball teams are just better when they share the ball a little bit more, right? When guys get to touch it, guys get a couple shots here and there. You look at even the fourth quarter, Brunson took 6 shots, Luka took 6 shots, and it kind of comes down to Brunson. It's Brunson trying to create his own stuff. It's Brunson. The Mavericks in Game 3 really made it a point early on to get Brunson his touches, get Brunson his attempts, get Brunson his, you know, drives, and they kind of cleared out for him and let him do his own thing and try and get something going. And so they did that in this game a little bit more in Game 4. And when Luka has like 20 something points and 11 assists, it's a much better game for the Mavericks than when Luka has like 40 points and like 3 assists. That's just the way that it is, because he's kicking out to 3-point shooters for the most part. And if he's getting assists, then they're knocking him down. And so, but the other thing is, Luka didn't change anything really about his game. Like, his usage percentage is probably going to be about the same. His attempts were about the same. He's not really changing too much about what he's doing. The shots just didn't go down for him in this game. And so, I don't know, do the Mavs have another level to go to? Like, can they still have a game where they share the ball like they have been the last two games, and then Luka also shoots a good percentage? I mean, that's just a Mavericks team that's really hard to stop.
Yeah, what I wonder is, can we have a game where Luka goes for 30 or 40 plus and somebody else manages to go for 20 plus next to him? Because the recipe for success seems to be Luka have a good game and then have at least one random Maverick of the role players step up and go for 20 plus. And that tends to work out pretty well for them, at least so far these playoffs. But Nick, when you look at just one of the mismatches here, maybe in favor of the Phoenix Suns, is their size, their length. You know, they've had DeAndre Ayton, they've had JaVale McGee, and they've won the rebounding battle in all 4 of these games. But in this game 4 specifically, it really felt like the Mavericks did a really good job kind of crashing the offensive glass, being a little aggressive, you know, in the rebounding department. How have you felt that they've really matched up with and dealt with the size from the Phoenix Suns in this game specifically, and just across the entirety of the series?
Yeah, the Mavs don't care about rebounds, really. Like, they're going to get beat on the rebounding edge. Isaac Harris, my co-host on Locked On Mavs, has been bringing it up every single game. It's like, hey, the Mavs won this game, and guess what? They got beat on the rebounds. They got out-rebounded. They got it rebounded by the Jazz. And what the Mavericks have to do, though, is limit the offensive rebounds. And so the Suns got 12 in this game, but the Mavericks got 10 of their own offensive rebounds. And so it's limiting those attempts, and it's team rebounding. You just have to send multiple guys at Ayton, the same way they did in the first round against Gobert. You just have to send multiple guys at him. Ayton finished with 11 rebounds. He had 6 offensive rebounds. A couple of them, those were putbacks, but like, they limited him in a way that wasn't like a dominating thing from Ayton. And that rebounding battle has not necessarily been a thing that is going to either, I don't know, hurt the Mavs too much that they can't win the game in other areas of the game.
All right. Well, last thing here, Nick. I mentioned him earlier, Dorian Finney-Smith having an incredible game here. I've got to give you a second to highlight just how important he was for the Mavericks in this one, going, you know, for 24 points, 8 of 12 shooting from the floor in this one to help them in their game 4 win.
Oh, Dorian was by far the
hot man, the hot player.
Hot player.
He was the hot man, the hot player. Watching Dorian Finney-Smith over the course of his career, and my first year covering the Mavericks, I was still in college and I was, you know, wanted to cover a team and I got credentials and I went to the practices, was Dorian's rookie year. And just seeing how this guy, this man, has come from a 30% three-point shooter and like a really shaky shooter in his first couple years in the NBA to this knockdown 8 of 12 from 3 in this game 4, like in a playoff game. He was leading the Mavericks in scoring for most of the game. To see him go from that player in his first couple of years to this player has been absolutely incredible. There is not a player in the NBA I'm more biased towards, even Luka. Like, I'm way more biased towards Dorian, and we'll say nice things about Dorian because he's the heart and soul of this Mavericks team. He is, you know, he is kind of what Draymond is to the Warriors, like in some way. He, you know, but Dorian can actually hit threes, which is pretty nice. But he also had 5 offensive rebounds, but he gets everybody together. There's a couple of plays where the Suns started to get, you know, started to get going offensively. Luka missed an assignment, and Dorian is just clapping at everybody, pointing and showing where they need to be. And then he looked back at Luka and he just was like, come on. Come on, let's go. Let's go. You got to get engaged. You got to be in this. And Dorian has that cachet now with Luka because he's played with him his entire career. They have that trust between them. And Dorian has been like the vocal leader on this team. And it's been incredible to watch his development.
The series is shifting back to Phoenix for Game 5. It's now a best-of-3 series. Can the Dallas Mavericks come out on top? You'll have us covered for all of that and more over at Locked On Dorian Finney-Smith. Oh, I'm sorry. No, Locked On Dallas Mavericks. Nick, appreciate you stopping by Locked On NBA with me. Coming up, James Harden was able to turn back the clock and hold off the Miami Heat, giving the Philadelphia 76ers the game 4 win, despite 40 points from Jimmy Butler. What do the Heat need to change to better contain James Harden and Joel Embiid? But first, a quick message from our friends over at BetOnline, because BetOnline.net is your number one source for all of your sports betting stats and info. Find all the latest sports developments, league reviews, and news, including this year's basketball playoffs and Major League Baseball. BetOnline is your continued source for all of your sports wagering information, from live betting, playoffs, esports, the NBA draft, and more. And speaking of the NBA draft, right now you can head over to BetOnline to find out who is the odds-on favorite to go number 1 overall this year in the 2022 NBA draft. Right now, Jabari Smith Jr. plus 100 to be the number 1 overall draft selection in this year's draft. You got Chet Holmgren at plus 190 and Paolo Banchero at plus 275. So for that and more, head to their website or use your mobile device to learn more about the trends an action available to you. BetOnline, it's where the game starts. And continuing on here at Locked On NBA Monday, as always, appreciate you for making Locked On NBA your first listen each and every day. For your next listen, make sure you go check out the Locked On NBA Big Board podcast. Host Rafael Barlow from NBA Draft Junkies and author of the NBA Big Board newsletter is joined by Richard Stamen, Sam Ferris, and Leif Thulin, giving fans an in-depth look into the NBA draft, mock draft, player rankings, and of course, big boards. It's free and available wherever you get your podcasts. Joining us now is Wes Goldberg from Locked On Heat and Locked On NBA, who you can follow on Twitter at WC Goldberg. Wes, just a little bit too much James Harden down at the tail end stretch of this game, with the Miami Heat falling to the Philadelphia 76ers 116 to 108. Just Harden delivering haymaker after haymaker in crunch time in this game, with Miami throwing like seemingly every conceivable defense at him. You know, they were doing a little zone, they were doing maybe some box and one, double teams, and none of it seemed to work. Was there something that you think the Heat didn't try that they could have potentially tried to pull out of the bag to slow down James Harden here in this game?
Not necessarily. Sometimes you just got to give credit to the player, right? And it's a cool thing, I guess, for James Harden to kind of go vintage all of a sudden. And he kind of found that step back jumper earlier in that second half. All of a sudden, Miami is closing out just a little bit harder, like kind of circa 2017 Houston Rockets James Harden, right? Where you just got guys freaking out every time he steps back in a way that we really haven't seen over the last couple of years, a defender react that way every time that he takes that step back. But the Heat were, after he made a couple, that opened up a bunch of driving lanes for him. It opened up the rest of the floor for him, and all it kind of set the stage for him to hit that dagger at the end. The other part of it, too, is that Joel Embiid is back. He played Friday night for the Sixers in their game 3 win. He obviously played tonight in their game 4 win. And now all of a sudden, Miami, after those first two games, that defense only had to key in on James Harden. You could throw a double team at him. You could throw a triple team at him. You could put four guys on him. It didn't matter because nobody else on Philly was making any shots. And you just put all of your attention you had on James Harden. Well, now Joel Embiid's there. And now this defense is forced to multitask with not only doubling James Harden every time he has the ball, but also trying to deny Joel Embiid the ball. They're fronting him in the post. They're doing a lot of creative things against Joel Embiid too. So there's just a lot of balls in the air for this Heat defense. And sometimes when you're dealing, when you're multitasking at that level, you can let slip a game like this to James Harden where he just goes off in the second half when you're so, you know, consumed with trying to keep Joel Embiid from roasting you. Turns out it was James Harden that did it.
We'll focus on how the Heat have tried to handle Joel Embiid here in a second. But Wes, do you think there was a specific point in this game where Miami really started to kind of let go of the rope, where it really kind of unraveled and got away from them?
Yeah, I mean, Jimmy Butler went off in the third quarter, kind of single-handedly kept Miami in the game. Then Jimmy Butler is on the bench for the start of the fourth quarter per his minutes pattern. And there was about a three-minute stretch there where the Heat did not score. And Philadelphia, in what was a close game, pulled away. And that was it. And the Heat brought Jimmy Butler back in. They clawed back here and there. They tried to make it a game. I think they got it to within 7 or 8 or something like that. But it was never going to be a game. That's when I thought that they lost this game. And just weird enough, sort of just copy and pasted from game 3. It was the exact same thing. Jimmy Butler just going off in the third quarter for the Heat on Friday night in game 3, keeping them in that game. You enter the fourth quarter in a close game, an opportunity to maybe steal one on the road. And then the offense just goes dry without Jimmy Butler in the game, and the Sixers pull away. Same thing happened tonight.
So potentially a carbon copy, game 3 to game 4. We'll talk about the shooting struggles as well. But with the way the Heat are trying to contain Joel Embiid, are they? I mean, obviously Bam Adebayo is an incredible defender, but you know, are they best, you know, keeping Bam on Embiid? We've seen them kind of have some switching schemes there defensively. What do you think is their best, or should be their best approach here moving forward the rest of the series?
I actually really like what they did in the second half to Joel Embiid. I've thought their defense overall has been really solid on him. I think part of it too is that Joel Embiid is not in complete basketball shape after having to go 6 days without doing any sort of basketball work. He's kind of losing steam at the end of these games, so that's probably part of it. I actually thought that Miami in the first half of this game, when Joel Embiid was really starting to become a factor, I thought they were switching too much, because the Sixers would just run a screen and roll, a series of screens for Joel Embiid, and then suddenly Joel Embiid would end up on Max Strus or Tyler Hero or somebody smaller, and then he was eating them, and that was it. In the second half, and I actually thought that Miami was switching Bam, too willing to switch Bam off of Joel Embiid. In the second half, they flipped that. They said, okay, we're going to switch everything except for when Bam is on Embiid, and they actually kind of just stuck Bam on Joel Embiid as much as they could. And I thought that was the right way to go. I think that was the right strategy. I think we're going to continue to see that. Bam is really good at fronting. He's so agile. He's so quick. He can kind of just get in front of you in a split second when it doesn't look like, you know, when it looks like the Joel Embiid has post position, Bam can just kind of flip it around and get in front of him and deny the entry pass. And so I think he's been really good at that. Also, he's really strong. I think he does as good a job as anybody. Like, nobody's going to force Joel Embiid out of the block, but he does as good a job as anybody in that regard. And so, yeah, I think we see more of the same with him.
On the flip side for Bam Adebayo, offensively, you know, almost a non-factor in that game 3, a nice bounce back game for him offensively here in game 4, despite the loss. Bam putting up, you know, 21 points, 9 of 12 shooting, was getting it done kind of in a variety of ways offensively. That must had to have been at least a welcome sight for the Heat to have him, you know, have that bounce back performance.
They need him to do that flat out. Like, regardless of this series, if they somehow advance, the only way the Heat are going to accomplish what it is that they want to accomplish is if Bam is maybe their best player, or like tied to be their best player with Jimmy Butler. And Bam, he was definitely more aggressive tonight, but he should watch film of Jimmy Butler tonight, where how unafraid he was of Joel Embiid. He was just putting his shoulder into him and he's saying, if you're going to block my shot, fine, block my shot, but I'm going to put the shot up anyway, and we're going to see what happens here. Bam Adebayo can do this, right? We've seen him do this. He's got that little floater push shot from like 8 feet out. He's got, you know, the free throw line extended mid-range jumper. Like, that, there's stuff in his bag. Obviously, he's incredibly athletic and can get to the basket. He can lay it up. He could dunk, of course, all these things. He should lean into that a little bit more, lean into that aggression. Obviously, that's going to take Miami making some of these shots to space the floor and allowing him to do that. It was a nice bounce back game, but they're going to need more of this. This is something that they need him to build on going forward.
So as far as this season goes, I found this really, you know, interesting stat here, but road games where Miami didn't shoot at least 25% from three all season long before this road trip in the playoffs to Philadelphia only happened one time. Now in back-to-back games on the road, they've shot less than 25%. You know, Wes, could we maybe be at the point where the Miami Heat maybe consider breaking the glass on Duncan Robinson? He played, you know, sparingly in the first round against Atlanta, and for all intents and purposes, hasn't played any meaningful minutes here in the second round so far in this series.
I don't know, because I thought that point was tonight, right? Like, they, to your point, they've missed 51 of their last 65 three-point attempts over the last two games. That's Game 6 Western Conference Finals, Houston Rockets, just weird, off-the-charts weird level of missing shots, right?
I don't appreciate the jab, Wes. Come on, man. That hurts. I got the jerseys in the background. Why you gotta do this to me, man? It stings. It's still fresh.
I figured you knew what I was talking about. But yeah, man, if you were ever going to break the glass on Duncan, it would have been tonight. And I just can't imagine. And I said this after game three, like, there's no way the Heat shoot this poorly again on Sunday. And then lo and behold, that's what exactly happened. So unless this happens again on Tuesday night in Miami, by the way, so obviously your role players should shoot better and all the things. But like, if we haven't seen Duncan Robinson yet, I have a hard time seeing a reason why we're going to see him later. Like, obviously Eric Spoelstra has made the decision, I'm not playing Duncan Robinson. I think the reason is Duncan Robinson is so foul prone and the Sixers are so good at baiting the fouls that he's probably assuming, you know, for every three Duncan Robinson makes, he's gonna allow an and one attempt to Joel Embiid or James Harden on the other end. And there's probably some logic to that. But also, I don't think that Eric Spoelstra thought that his team would be shooting 20% from three-point range either. So I thought that something should have given. I thought we should have saw Duncan Robinson tonight. We didn't. And because of that, I don't know. I have a hard time believing that we're going to see him going forward if he didn't play tonight.
Yeah, this was the Miami Heat team that led the NBA in three-point percentage throughout the regular season. And yet, you know, an anomaly here in back-to-back games here in the playoffs on the biggest stage. Last thing here for you, Wes, before we let you go. How concerning is potentially this, you know, hamstring situation with Kyle Lowry? We saw points throughout this game where he was kind of grimacing, reaching back at it a little bit. And obviously he's, you know, a very integral part of what the Miami Heat are trying to accomplish. And if he misses any more significant time in the playoffs, then it could be really detrimental to what the Heat are trying to do.
Yeah, it is a concern. I think Kyle Lowry is playing through this. I think if this were the regular season, this is the kind of injury that would have kept him out for a couple of weeks. Instead, it only kept him out for a couple of games in this series. And he's clearly dealing with the effects of it. He missed all six of his three-point attempts, and you can go back and watch him. He missed all of them short. That is very clearly a hamstring issue. You don't have your leg strength that you're accustomed to having. You're not getting the lift that you usually get. It's a concern, and he does enough for you from a playmaking perspective. Even defensively, he's still so smart in his positioning and all these things that he still is making, I think, it's not a negative impact. He's still doing enough positive things where it's almost neutral at this point. But the Heat need players to make shots at the end of the day. And it was telling that in game three and in game four, in crunch time, they went away from Kyle Lowry and they went with other guys like Victor Oladipo and Tyler Hero and other backcourt guys in his place. I think we might be at the point now where you saw Kyle Lowry grimacing even more in game four than you did in game three. He actually had to go back to the locker room at some point. He was asked about it after the game. He said basically about his availability in game five, we'll see. It would not shock me if he needed to take one game off because of the injury the injury that he's dealing with right now seems to have been inflamed a little bit in this game.
Can the Miami Heat actually get back to their regular season ways and, you know, start hitting some three-point shots as the series shifts back to South Beach for Game 5? Wes, you're going to have us covered for all of that and more over at Locked On Heat. I appreciate you stopping by Locked On NBA with me.
You got it.
Coming up, the Memphis Grizzlies will likely be without their star point guard Ja Morant for Game 4 against the Golden State Warriors. Was the play by Jordan Poole a dirty play on Ja Morant? And what are the Grizzlies' chances without Ja Morant if he doesn't play in Game 4? But first, a quick message from our friends over at Built Bar, because when it comes to protein bars, you've got to check out Built Bar. They're the number one protein bar on the market. They've got so many incredible flavors to choose from. You got raspberry, strawberry, mint brownie, salted caramel, cookies and cream. The list goes on and on and on. So many incredible options to choose from. Every single bar is coated in 100% delicious chocolate. They're not gritty or chalky like other protein bars you'll find on the market. And best of all, every single bar, it's low-cal, low-sugar, high-protein, high-fiber. Amazing if you're on a keto diet. Amazing if you're trying to cut back a little bit, lose a little bit of weight. You can check them out. Just go to built.com and use promo code LOCK15 to get 15% off your very next order of the best tasting protein bars on the market. Again, that's promo code LOCK15 for 15% off at built.com. And final segment here at Locked On NBA Monday. As always, appreciate you for making Locked On NBA your first listen each and every day. Joining us now is Sean Coleman from Locked On Grizzlies. You can follow on Twitter at StatsSAC. Now, Sean, Shams Charania unfortunately reporting that Ja Morant is likely to miss game four of this series between the Memphis Grizzlies and the Golden State Warriors after a lot of scrutiny regarding the incident taking place in this most recent game between these two teams with Jordan Poole in game three, where Poole kind of reached in, grabbed Morant's knee, maybe pulled it back a little bit as Morant was making his move. Ja went on Twitter right after the game and tweeted out, you know, quote unquote, broke the code. Taylor Jenkins was maybe making some accusations after the game, you know, with the play at hand. This series has had a lot of, you know, kind of extracurricular activities, if you will, ejections, physical borderline dangerous plays, suspensions, and now this. So first things first, Sean, you know, in your mind, was this a dirty play? Do you think the reactions from Ja, Taylor Jenkins and company were warranted given, you know, what took place on the floor?
So I don't think it was a dirty play. I don't think that any of these plays that have occurred, the Draymond flagrant in game one, the Dylan Brooks flagrant in game two, this incident with Jordan in game three, I think there were different levels of recklessness, you know, even, you know, probably not the intent. I don't think anyone had the intent of injuring anyone. It's just that, unfortunately, we've had a play every single game. And to add to it, you've had the reactions in the, you know, emotional reactions right after the games from coaches, from players and things like that. It's all part of the game and it's all feeding into it. So to answer your question directly, no, I do not think the play that happened with Jordan Poole was in any way, shape or form dirty. I think that it was unfortunate. I do think that was what caused Ja to likely miss game four. And unfortunately, those types of things happens. But, you know, the significance of it is added to by what obviously has already occurred in this series. So it's just, to be honest with you, Jackson, and there's led to a lot of back and forth between both fan bases, even back and forth between media and things like that. I'm just, to be honest on my end, I'm a bit exhausted by it. Taylor Jenkins has every right to protect his players. Ja has every right, obviously, to react as he wants. But at the end of the day, I'm just simply wanting this to get back to basketball. And now, unfortunately, the Grizzlies are going to have to navigate at least game four without their best player.
Getting back to basketball is what this should be about. But you mentioned kind of some of the back and forth between these two fan bases. And I wonder if, Sean, maybe there's a bit of a double standard at play here almost with, you know, some of the reactions from Warriors fans, from Warriors media, even the Bay Area media, kind of brushing the situation off as if it's nothing, just one game removed from the Dylan Brooks, Gary Payton situation, which had, you know, Warriors fans, maybe rightfully so, you know, up in arms about how that play really kind of worked its way out. And again, this really changes the complexion of the series. Now, obviously, Gary Payton and Ja Morant, different levels of player here, but maybe there's a bit of a double standard at play here when you look at the reactions from the fans regarding all of this.
Sure, and it may be a bit magnified in this situation where, you know, you typically don't see three games in a row this significant of a you know, extracurricular type play. Again, I'm not saying that Jordan Poole's was that, but it was a play that led to the injury of another player. It's been three straight games where we've seen this, and you're always going to get bias from you know, fan bases. You know, they're going to favor their team, and sometimes, you know, a double standard may occur. I don't necessarily think that in and of itself is egregious. I do think that some of the, you know, other things out there on Twitter and things like that have been, but that's a story for another time. But when it comes to the double standard and things like that, I get fan bases wanting to be biased towards their own rosters, their own players. I get coaches wanting to be able to protect their own players, being there to make sure that their team is not in any way, shape, or form being painted in an unjust light. But at the end of the day, double standard or not, all in all, the thing that needs to happen, especially on the Grizzlies side of things, is they can't keep getting caught, or not that they have been, they can't get caught up in the extra stuff because now they're down 2-1. They've got a very critical game in game four. They're going to be without their best player. They've got plenty of other things to focus on instead of things outside of basketball.
Now, even if the, now it's still, you know, unfortunately, it's not confirmed yet. So there's still like that slim chance that Ja does play game four. But right now it's looking like they will be without their star player for game four. Now, if the Grizzlies are indeed without Ja, that doesn't necessarily spell defeat. This is a Grizzlies team that found quite a lot of success in this past season, despite missing their star point guard, you know, for a significant stretch. So how do the Grizzlies change without Morant on the floor, you know, over the course of an entire 48-minute game, Sean?
Oh, it absolutely starts on the defensive end of the ball. And you're right. They did find a lot of success in being able to play without Morant, but they did it by playing their style of basketball, producing in the paint, producing turnovers, rebounds, extra possessions, getting out on the run. The Warriors are kicking the Grizzlies' butt in every one of those areas so far this game. So you're not just adding to the fact that you're going to get be without a player who's given you 38 points of production himself over the past three games. You're now going to have to climb the mountain of figuring out how without him, you get back to playing your style of basketball. But it starts on the defensive end. The Grizzlies allowed far too many good open looks. The Warriors converted far too many of them in game three. With Dylan Brooks coming back, with Steven Adams likely to get a little bit of playing time this game, the Grizzlies are going to have to make the Warriors as many times as possible work for their shots. The Grizzlies are going to have to win the rebounding edge, and the Grizzlies are going to have to use ball movement, especially with the decision-making of Tyus Jones being featured now. They're going to have to make the right passes consistently as possible, but the player who's going to have to come back and play in a very effective game is Dylan Brooks on both ends of the court.
It feels like the Steve Kerr and the Warriors have kind of made Memphis play their style of game, right? Going small, exactly. Effectively running, you know, arguably no center lineups at times. You can make the argument maybe Draymond is out there, you know, but obviously he's a lot smaller, a lot, you know, able to play on the perimeter for all intents and purposes. Do you think there's maybe a card up Taylor Jenkins' sleeve to just say, you know what, we're just, instead of going to trying to play your game, maybe we'll just throw out like our size and really see if that's an advantage that he can try and get, you know, moving forward into this next game of the series?
Absolutely. That's the thing that's really right now hurting the Grizzlies. Coming into this series, you knew that the strength when it came to shooting from distance was the Golden State was on the Golden State Warriors end. You assumed that when it came to producing in the paint, it was on the Grizzlies end. The rebounding was on the Grizzlies end. But the Grizzlies have tried 20 more three-point shots than the Warriors. The problem is that they're not making anywhere, you know, they're not making a significant amount more. The Warriors have outscored the Grizzlies 178 to 130 in the paint. The big story in this series so far, Jackson, the Warriors are shooting 61% inside the arc, the Grizzlies 47%. The Warriors have 92 assists to the Grizzlies 64. I don't mean to turn this into a stats conversation, but my point is that the Warriors are doing a much better job using ball movement to find the best shot possible. With Dylan Brooks back, the Grizzlies are going to have to make it a lot harder on the Warriors to be able to do that. And then to your point, the ace up the sleeve is getting the ball movement going to where they can find a way to score in the paint and then allow for themselves to be able to find some good open looks from three and actually convert them.
Well, seeing as how your Twitter handle is StatsSAC, I'd be disappointed if you didn't try and turn this into a stats conversation, Sean. But final point here before we let you go, you know, with this, you know, very pivotal game four, obviously down 2-1 in the series, you got to try to even things up here if you're Memphis. What can Memphis do better to slow down the absurd trio of Steph, Klay, and Jordan Poole, who combined for 78 points in game three?
The thing is to make them work for every shot. Now, I know that that's a lot easier said than done, but the Grizzlies did do at least a, you know, I would say a decent job of it of games one and two. Now, the Warriors made only 39% of their open shots in game two. They made 67% of their open shots in game three. I would likely venture to guess they'll probably hit around 45 to 50 in game three if things kind of regress and go normal. But my point is that the Grizzlies did a very good job of scrambling, rotating, what have you, when they had Dylan Brooks in the lineup in games one and two. They need to get back. You're not going to be able to stop all three. But at the very least, if you can contest as many of those three individual shots, if you can make them work hard for their three shots, that is something the Grizzlies can do with their lineups. That is number one. But the second thing is winning the possession battle. Not only trying to find the best shot possible on offense as many times down the court as possible, but limiting the second chance opportunities for the Warriors and getting your own second chance opportunities. Those two things are going to be what's critical for the Grizzlies to win game four without Ja.
Will the Grizzlies be without Ja in game four? And if they are without Ja, can they pull off the win and even the series at two games apiece? You're going to have us covered for all of that and more, of course, over at Locked On Grizzlies. Sean, appreciate you stopping by Locked On NBA with me.
Pleasure as always, Jackson. Have a great one, sir.
That's going to do it for another Monday edition of Locked On NBA. As always, appreciate you for checking out the show. If you haven't done so yet, please consider subscribing wherever you listen to your podcasts, Apple, Spotify, Google, the Odyssey app, free and available on all platforms. Also, be sure to check us out on YouTube. Just go to YouTube, search Locked On NBA, like, comment, subscribe, all of that. But as always, thank you so much for listening, and we look forward to having you back right here at Locked On NBA, the biggest stories with the local experts.